It's time for Off the Curve with Justin Spiro.
Welcome back to Off the Curve. Justin Spiro here. Happy to have you. A lot going on at Michigan State. Obviously, he's a man in high demand. He lives far away, so he's joining us remotely. Graham Couch, Lansing State Journal. Great to have you back, man.
No, thanks for having me.
I think that the talk of the town right now is senior night at Michigan State, the Breslin Center. No big lead up. Just tell me, what was the scene like there for those that couldn't go? I wish I could have been there. Describe the scene there. It seemed pretty emotional on the television side of it.
Yeah, it was emotional. It was the whole game had a lot going on. It was one of those games where it almost was like too much for the team to handle. It felt like it was heavy. You had the hockey team, the gymnastics team, missing another team. There were a number of teams honored, and the crowd was into it. It felt like a big game. It felt like an important game. You got the you need a win, at least one win, to make sure you keep that NCAA tournament streak alive. And the team just really struggled for a long time. And then, obviously the post game, I think you felt the exhale. And even the crowd, which, the crowd gets frustrated with this class at times, but there was a lot of class and a lot of support and a lot of vigor behind their applause. And it wound up being a good night. If that shot goes in from Northwestern with about 10 seconds to go, it could have been a very different emotion at the end.
Yeah, I think Tyson Walker sort of expressed that, right? Just, man, they were so close to losing that. And if they did, that would have been one of the worst losses, I think, ever, just with all the implications. Obviously, the tournament streak being maybe on death's doorstep, still salvageable, but they'd basically have to win at least a couple more games. I feel like that was one of the biggest, if not wins, just non-losses, at least since you've been covering the team. Is that fair?
Yeah, there was almost so much more to lose. And in a lot of ways, that made there to be quite a bit to gain. And the way, Indiana's played recently only makes it worse. I mean, they've won three in a row, two on the road, one by 10 at Minneapolis. Xavier Johnson's back playing well. Like, all of a sudden, a game that a month ago looked like the Hoosiers might quit now looks like a really difficult game Sunday afternoon at Assembly Hall. So you needed to get this one if you're Michigan State. You couldn't not beat Northwestern at home, even if it's a good Northwestern team. Or you were likely going to be going into Minneapolis needing multiple wins, maybe. And that's the thing. You don't really know what you need. Because what's interesting about Michigan State, too, is you've got these metrics with, the net and KenPom that look fantastic. And obviously, the more you lose, the more those slide. But Michigan State's still pretty comfortably ahead of where any team that's ever been left out of the field has been. So it's hard to know exactly what they need, but conventional wisdom is they needed at least to win one game, which they did last night. And if they don't win again, it still could be a little bit unnerving on Selection Sunday.
You used the word exhale. Was it more of an exhale, more a sense of relief than joy? It seemed like a blend of both on TV. It was a weird scene in a lot of ways, in a good way. Obviously, the Stephen Izzo element. Mati Sissoko's brother is there. Malik Hall's parents are there. It's tough to pin down. Was it more relief than joy, do you think?
Yeah, I think I think you could say there's joy in the relief, I get that, because it seemed like there was joy, but because what happened at the end of that game felt like the Ohio State game. It felt like other situations. This has not been a team where those final seconds have gone well all the time. And so it felt, just ominous. I mean, I would say there was a lot of relief, but after that, it gave way to, I think, understanding that, that there is a lot of happiness. There is a lot to reflect on. There's a human element that adds to the joy. And you talk about Stephen Izzo and Sissoko playing in front of his brother and everything Malik Hall's been through with his family. I think there's a common bond between MSU fans and players in that moment, even if there are people like, A.J. Hogard is somebody that frustrates the heck out of the fan base. And yet all these guys chose MSU, and that's the thing they have in common. And there is a bond that comes with that. And that creates something that is just different on senior nights, and it's recognized. And no matter what, it's sort of like having a kid, I think, for a lot of people, or a brother that you can drive you insane. You can say tough things about, but in that moment, when it's time to recognize them, you do love them. And I think that's the way people generally feel.
I was talking to my college roommate about this team, and his opinion is essentially this season's goal has shifted to just prolong the streak. Just get in. I don't care what happens. I don't think we can expect anymore. Is he right? I mean, is this to a point now where if they just continue the streak and prolong it, that no, you're not going to be happy, but that's the goal as it is now adjusted? Or do you think there is still something more there where this team may have a run in them if a few things just maybe break their way once they get to the tournament?
Well, I think there are different goals for different people. I think the fan base's goal is probably switched, you know, and obviously people want them to win once they're in the tournament. I don't think the players feel that way, because I do think this is a group that has a little something to them in terms of confidence and a sense that they can turn it on in big moments. You know, we saw in that setting against Baylor when they feel like they can beat anybody. And one thing that this team does have, I believe, and this is to its strength and detriment, is they've got a lot of really good college players on a flawed roster, but no real pros other than a guy like Xavier Booker, who's not a pro yet, but is will eventually be one. And what that creates is the ability to play up, because nobody overwhelms you. You've got a lot of sweat equity. You've been in the game a long time. You're 23 years old. You don't fear anybody. You know you can rise to other people's level, but you also don't have the ability to overwhelm people. And that allows you to lose to Ohio State. And so it's an interesting team in that regard. It's also a team that if they just had a really solid, sound interior presence at the five, we may feel differently about a lot of these guys, about Hogard. I mean, if he was the point guard on a team that won six more games, or five more games and was playing for a high seed and they were winning, and his struggles would be looked at differently. I think he'd be looked at as somebody for the games he had that were good, and praised differently. So I think to some degree, it's not entirely their fault. They're playing with a deck that isn't full in terms of contending, and that falls on the coaching staff. And then there's some of it that does fall on them. I mean, you know, you look at, they should have beaten Ohio State and Iowa and Minnesota, probably without having that great interior presence. And you can argue that if just Tyson Walker doesn't crumple to the ground against Minnesota, they win that game. And if he was still the same player he was the first 14 games and sort of his shooting and all that, that they went and won, you know, three more games at minimum. And then the 13-6 tied with Illinois at number two in the Big Ten, probably a 4-5 seed. And, you know, the whole tenor of things is different. Doesn't change the fact that there are matchups that they're going to struggle with because of the center position. But it's one of those teams. I cannot tell when Izzo says they may have a run in them, like if he's playing to the crowd only, or if he's saying it because, you know, he always says it this time of year and he's seen it happen, or if he truly believes it with this group. And I think there's probably a mix of both.
Yeah, I mean, whatever he actually believes, I can't put any stock into his senior night comments, because he has played to the crowd in every single one of them, of which I'm aware. So he may or may not, but not, I'm not swaying my opinion based on anything he said that night. And I think it's interesting when, especially when you have a college coach with this type of tenure, this doesn't really happen anywhere, certainly not in the pros, where you can compare different teams, because it's the same coach, particularly in college. They have more of their fingerprints on things. You know, they have a little more power typically than in the pros. I like looking at the different teams against each other, you know, 09 versus 2015, you know, 2000 versus 2019, and making those comparisons. I think right now, the comparison that I can best make is the 2010-2011 team, which, you know, we talked today, it preceded your time covering this program by about a year. But I mean, Ben, if you can throw up, do we have that side by side just for the picture? There are some similarities here. So the 2010-2011 team, fresh off two Final Fours, preseason AP number two, obviously finished not where they wanted to be, 19-15, lost in the round of 64. We're looking at a very similar picture right now as we stand, 23-24 season, preseason AP number four. Some independent services had them as high as two. They sit now 18-12, obviously finished to be determined. But, you know, if you figure they may lose to IU in Bloomington, that's 18-13. Maybe they pick up a win in the Big Ten tournament, but we're kind of falling right in that 19-20 range and 13-14-15 loss range. Kind of seems like the same thing, right? I know that precedes your time, but am I crazy to think there's some similarity there?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are. I mean, the difference is back then that team had really accomplished a lot. That group, you know, obviously the two Final Fours, and they just played a lot of basketball and perhaps were sick of each other, you know, or whatever it might have been. I wasn't in those locker rooms, but I've heard about them. It was not the most. There's not a ton of harmony going on at the time, and I think this team does like each other. Okay, I don't think there's that disconnect. I think the reason this team was so high was different than that team. That team was ranked number two because of what they had done. This team was ranked number two largely based on a sort of a tease of what they could be through that Sweet 16 run, the projection with guys coming in, and then sort of the model that you've got an old team with a good young recruiting class. So there's a lot more projection with this team. But if you're looking for the closest comparisons, it's probably it. You know, maybe, you know, I thought for a while at the very beginning of the year, they had a chance to be more like the 04-05 team that wasn't quite the best team in the country, but, you know, had a chance. But that team had more, you know, more pros, and it was just a better group, and obviously, you know, finished better.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, I think you and I are along the same lines with our arguments. You mentioned it in passing just a minute ago. You talked about it on your show today. I've said on Twitter multiple times, this team is one pretty good center away from being 5 or 6 wins better. That is no exaggeration. They've lost so many coin flip games where they were, I would argue, periled mostly by that gap in the roster. And had they done that, give me there were so many portal guys out there that were good that I've joked, but it's true. The 9th best center in this past portal cycle would have been a massive, massive upgrade and changes this team. If you look at it, if they are, in fact, 5-6 wins better, you take 5 of those losses, make them wins. I mean, they basically have Iowa State's record, you know, 23-7 they are somewhere in there. I mean, at 23-24 wins, they're basically Iowa State. Iowa State's what, 5th or 6th in the AP poll. So couldn't I argue that this entire disappointment, as it's been so far, is sure there's other factors. There's guys that miss shots in other games, but it basically boils down to the portal stubbornness, right?
Yeah. And what's interesting about that is it's hard to know. Like, I think Izzo wants to do it his way. He wants to have a developmental program. But I mean, the evidence is there that when he's thought they really needed somebody at a certain position, at a critical position, he's gone and done it. Tyson Walker is the evidence. They did not think they had a point guard. They didn't know what A.J. Hogard was going to develop into. They didn't trust it. The class before him wasn't developing as they wanted. And so they went out and got Tyson Walker. Now, he has developed into a guy who plays largely off the ball now, but that was not the intent. And he was a point guard originally for MSU. And so there was no hesitation on that. I do think that while there is some stubbornness, I also think that there's a miscalculation. And I think that they were worried about over recruiting guys. And they thought between the 4 big men, they knew Booker wasn't ready, but they thought he was a little more ready and that maybe the development would happen quicker. I think they didn't know obviously Jackson Kohler was going to get hurt. And I do think he would have made a difference to some degree. I don't know defensively though. And then I think they thought based on the progression Cooper made last year, maybe that happens a little bit earlier. And, you know, he's a 6'11 guy. And then they thought Sissoko had another jump and he didn't. And so I think they just miscalculated. And the mistake to me is that adding a big man, the only person you're recruiting over is Mati Sissoko. And the other guys would just be sophomores. If you bring in a grad transfer like Rank Mask Nebraska or somebody like that, a 1-year guy, you're not recruiting over anybody. You know, Xavier Booker's a freshman, you know, and so by the time he's ready, you know, the deck would be cleared and you'd be able to evaluate and decide whether you need to do it again the next year. And so that's what they should have done. And I think Izzo would agree with that at this point. And I will be very surprised this offseason if they don't not only maybe, you know, obviously a 5 perhaps, but also some size on the wing where they've struggled. I would be surprised if they don't go get a couple guys. And you do have to be careful. Like, there's no need for a ball handling point guard type on this roster next year, right? You don't need to go just get everything willy nilly. It's roster construction matters. It's difficult to do. You do have to make sure guys don't leave because they're offended. But you're going to lose guys. And that's the thing Michigan State hasn't had to deal with yet. And I think people are just going to have to get used to that. It's going to be a little more, you know, a little more fluid, the roster in future years. And that's just how it is.
Yeah, I mean, Justin Thin was on my show, gosh, I mean, going on 2 years ago now. And I was just, it was before last season. And I was just crushing Izzo for not going after a center. And we talked about Manny Bates, who ended up going to Butler. And I said, you know, this is a team that should know better, that, you know, the coaching staff that should know better about what they need and, you know, what they have, what they don't have, and where their holes are. And I said, if they get into the tournament and they lose by a point or two or three points and they're getting just obliterated on the glass or they're giving up a lot of points in the paint or whatever, I'm going to be sitting here saying, okay, great. Even if you went to the Elite Eight or the Final Four and then you lose by a point, I'm going to be thinking, oh man, what if we had that center? Fast forward, that's basically exactly what happened. Now, they did fine on the glass against Kansas State in that Sweet 16 loss. They got crushed at the rim. They basically got alley-ooped to death in that game. That was one of the main problems they had. And they got absolutely nothing from the center position. It was like 2 points, I think, combined between Cooper and Sissoko. It was, they got nothing. And I feel like your response is fair after, you know, maybe before 2 years ago, but not now, because couldn't I argue he already got bitten by it in that Kansas State game? We were whining about the lack of a portal center all of last year. How do you not learn the lesson now? And we're in the same boat. It's like, you were already wrong. Why did we need to test this experiment a second time when we already know?
When I think the if you're looking for optimism for the program still under Izzo long-term and reasons why you want it to happen under Izzo, is he does have some tremendous advantages. And this is one of the reasons it's a little, I mean, it's just bizarre they didn't do it, because, you know, there aren't that many coaches that are as legendary as Izzo out there with his cachet. People want to play for him. And there aren't many places that also have, you know, a good NIL situation the way they do with hoops, where it's pretty stable. I mean, they've got the money for these guys, and they'll have the money for a transfer coming in. They're going to be able to get guys. They're going to be able to take advantage of it, and they're going to be able to, I think the transfer portal, almost more than the high school ranks, is where somebody who's a little more mature, who's 22 years old, looks around and says, yeah, a place like that didn't want me before I developed, but I can go play basketball for Michigan State for Tom Izzo. I can make a couple hundred grand. Like that, and it's a pretty decent deal, and I think that should be something that's a real strength of the program in Izzo's final years that I don't know will be there 100% after him to the same degree. And they ought to be able to take advantage of it. And nobody's, you know, as long, you're better off if you can bring in a Jeremy Fears and a Trey Holloman and have those guys in your program and develop that way. Sure. But you're always going to wind up with holes, and you used to not be able to fix them. It used to be just, it was what it was when they, you know, and I know they had injuries in 2016-17, for example, when Miles Bridges and Cassius Winston were freshmen and they were stuck with Kenny Goins playing a lot of center. And those injuries happened later than maybe the portal would have allowed them. But you just sort of dealt with it back then because there was nothing to do. And in this day and age, if those injuries had happened, and I can't even, maybe they did happen even earlier. I can't remember, failing me now, but there's a remedy. And because there's a remedy, you have to take advantage of it. And Michigan State's in a perfect position to do it. There's no doubt they should have brought in a veteran center this year, or a rugged power forward, somebody who could rebound, play multiple positions, and just give you something else down there.
I mean, it didn't help that Manny Bates earlier in the year against that same Kansas State team went for like 20 and 12 and four blocks and just wrecked them. I know it's a sliding door, you know, butterfly effect thing. I know everything changes, although in this case, I would argue for the better. Michigan State would have had a better seeding. But it is interesting where, I mean, if you lose in overtime, you basically lost by a point. I've always felt that way. You know, if you had one more point in regulation, you win the game. They basically lost by 1 point and got absolutely nothing from the center position. And had they gotten any production from the center position, if you'll neglect the butterfly effect, it's like, okay, you got Florida Atlantic and San Diego State standing in your way between now and playing on Monday against UConn. If you have that better center, UConn probably, I mean, let's say it's an average center, it's probably still a 3.5-4 point favorite, but you're in the game. You hang another Final Four banner. It was even more frustrating, and Malik Hall was on my show and talked about, not from the portal perspective, but how much that Kansas State loss hurt. They were very aware, and Malik talked about it, They knew who they would have been playing, and they watched that unfold, and they're still kicking themselves. I would argue he did his players a disservice, and I've been arguing this for 2 years. I understand his argument about loyalty, health of the game, all that stuff. I get it. I understand it. But could I fairly argue you come to Michigan State, you come here in part to win championships. You come here in part to participate in Final Fours. Some people call it Final Four U still. Could I argue he's robbing them of their best chance at doing that by neglecting it? Didn't Malik Hall deserve the best roster around him to make the run this year in his last year? Is that fair or am I crazy?
No, I think it is fair. I mean, that would be, that's the perfect counter to Izzo saying, you know, I'm trying to do right by my players. Well, doing right by your players is also creating the best roster that gives them the chance to do the best. And where I think Izzo and I like really disagree is Sissoko. And look, we all know Sissoko, great human. Nobody's doubting that, right? But there has not been evidence for some time that he had another gear, that he really saw it. Like, to me, Sissoko is very similar to he's like the center version of Tum Tum Nair. And I used to watch Tum Tum play, and it was like if the offense was running as it was supposed to and every play went, it was fine. But as soon as something had to be improvised, it wasn't just that it didn't really happen when he was out there. It was that his other teammates didn't know if he saw what they saw. And I think that with Sissoko, I see it sometimes with guys like Jaden Akins, like when he talks, I can just see the frustration because the guards don't know, there's not the ability to have improvisation. And that one of the things, even when Jackson Kohler got healthy, I thought would help them and would have really helped if he had been healthy all year, is he's a guy who offensively just has a feel. And when he's out there, they know he sees the game the way they see the game. And it's not just about his point production, which hasn't been much this year. And I think would have been better if he had been healthy from the get-go. But it's more about the way that it frees up everybody else because they're all playing the same possession, right? They're all seeing the same thing. And I think that Izzo's, you know, and lately he's gone away from Sissoko quite a bit. I would have gone away a lot earlier. I would have tried to develop Booker to some degree, but Cooper more and more and more, because to me, he's got 2 years left. I still think he's got a higher ceiling. We saw him take an in-season leap last year. Maybe it wouldn't happen, but it's not going to happen with Sissoko. And so if the ultimate goal is to make a run in the postseason, it is not going to happen with him. And you just got to recognize that earlier. And that's where I really disagree with how they've been handled this year. And I think the Wisconsin game, I wrote this column when they lost in Madison. That was, we saw then why they'd fall short. Like, there was no way around it. I know Wisconsin's kind of fallen off a cliff here, but they were playing pretty well at the time. But the matchups, a big wing and centers who, you know, you can play through and can rebound, that Michigan State does not have an adequate counter to that matchup.
Yeah, and the other thing I would argue too, you know, when I had Malik with Carson Cooper here last week, obviously a lot more recently, we were talking about the portal, and I understand, what else are they going to say? They back their coach. And I think they really believe it, though, because I've talked to these guys off camera when they're sitting here when, the, you know, we're not rolling. Tyson told me the same thing. They basically mimic what he says, what Izzo says about, you know, oh, family atmosphere, and we don't want to just bring in some guy that's going to disrupt the apple cart in terms of team chemistry and then derail things. I would argue, derail what? This has been the worst 4-year stretch of the Izzo era, especially if you, you know, take out the first 2 years of his tenure when he was inheriting a rebuild. And this is as bad as it's been. Now, it's a pretty damn good basement, but what are we trying to preserve here? By the Izzo standard, it's been disappointing. And as far as the team chemistry issues, we shared this graphic with them. They were kind of floored. Carson told me after the show, he goes, what? Did not know that. He was shocked. You look at last year's Final Four teams, the four participants, 33 players between the four played at least 10 minutes in one individual game, not 6 and 1 and 4 in the other. They played at least 10 minutes in one of the two games, 33 of those guys. 13 of them were transfer portal guys. So you're looking at 39.3%, just under 40% of the Final Four participants were transfer portal guys. Obviously, the portal is not so devastating to a team's chemistry and harmony that it's to the detriment of success. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous at this point, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you can pick the wrong guy, but that's part of recruiting and figuring out who you don't want in your program, right? I mean, there are lots of you know, I think look at what Nebraska is doing in part because they've got, you know, a viable center right now. You know, Iowa had a, you know, as a power forward, it came from the mid-major level who gave Michigan State fits and just rebounded like crazy against them. And, you know, those are just two examples of guys who would have been fits at Michigan State. And so, yeah, I don't think there's any question about it now. It's at this point, it may have taken them a year too long. It's how do they react to it? Because while this class is not going to benefit from any pivot, it's not like, you know, they're leaving and what you have is Alvin Ellis and you know, Javon Bess, and just you haven't been recruiting that well. They've been recruiting at a high level. So I think that's the promising part of things. And you know, can you now, as you move forward, what's done is kind of done at this point. And you try to get the most out of this, make the run you can. You know, I'd argue you have to, you know, you have to keep, it's a race against time with Booker a little bit because he's the one guy who's developing fast enough that maybe he can give you more and more by the time you get to bigger and bigger games, who knows. But next year, you've got a team, if everybody sticks around with Booker and, you know, with Jeremy Fears and Trey Holloman and probably Jaden Akins, who I think Akins is actually maybe better off playing more of a two guard than on the wing. I think that's what he wants. I think it would be beneficial for his career, and I'd like to see him do that. You know, Cohen Carr, you've got some holes, but you've got a lot to build around. So can you take that roster then and with a pretty, you know, decent core and, you know, strengthen it along the edges to give yourself a real chance with that group? And that'll be the test. I think this is a big offseason to see what they've learned, what they've adjusted to. This isn't the day and age where you can just sort of run it back and let your guys grow into something. You probably got one more year with Booker. That guy's going to be a pro. I mean, the way the threes he hit over Zach Edey, it is not going to take that long for him to develop into a guy who the NBA is going to want. You got one more year. And that, you know, take advantage of that. Even if, you know, Fears is a freshman, you know, you'll have a senior Akins, you'll have a junior Trey Holloman. That's plenty of experience. You still got one more year of COVID guys throughout college basketball, which makes it harder when you don't, like this year they have Malik Hall and Tyson Walker. So they're two dudes, are those guys. And there's still going to be more of them next year, which I think makes it harder on teams that don't have them to win big in college basketball. But you've got a chance to be really good. It's up to you to go find those guys.
I agree with all that. I just wish the lesson had been learned when it needed to be learned. I can't believe they needed to learn it the first time. And they still a second time over didn't figure it out. It's wild to me. I think I could argue they've cost themselves potentially two Final Fours. I think they make it last year with an even adequate center. Give me junior year Goran Suton type, you know, 9-7 and efficient numbers and play good defense. And I think they're there. And, you know, I get the argument of, oh, what's done is done. And you're right. Of course, there's no time machine. At the same time, there has to be some accountability for it. And I think it's worth talking about in terms of the Izzo legacy. If he never gets that second one, one of his biggest mistakes being a conscious choice is just beyond frustrating. This isn't a mistake or a calculated risk, or this is a conscious choice to do something that was in real time, objectively, I think, ridiculous. That said, the Booker stuff, I totally agree with. I've had no problem with the Booker stuff, but sorry, go ahead, Graham.
No, I think his two, in my opinion, his two worst coaching jobs since I've been covering them. And, you know, I've been following the team since he took it over. I was a 15-year-old kid, though. I wasn't really, you know, the ins and outs weren't as much as I wasn't paying attention. But to me, it's 2017-18, the Miles Bridges sophomore year team and this team. And those are the two teams that I think that, you know, one is, with this particular group, and I do think that the Jeremy Fears Jr. deal limited them this year and took away some of the possibilities to try some other things at point guard, to move some guys around. I think the Tyson Walker injury was limiting because last year, you know, late in the year, they went to him at the one a lot when Hogard was struggling and with great results. So those two things were a little out of their control, but the center position was not, as we've talked about. And so that's that element of this year and not getting the most out of that position and figuring out a way to even maximize this. If you're going to go without a great center, figure out a way to win small, figure out a way to be different. And they haven't done that. And then in 2017, 18, that, that team was too big. And I thought, you know, part of the problem was Gavin Schilling and Ben Carter. Those guys would come in a year earlier to be the guys, got hurt. They wind up coming back for extra years. They've got 47 centers on the team. They moved Miles Bridges to the wing when he was better as a power forward in college. I know that's what he was going to play, the wing in the pros, but they would have figured that part out. Cassius Winston was the most efficient player in college basketball, and the ball was too often in Bridges' hands, and they were just too big. And it wasn't the Ben Carter, Jaren Jackson things, a debate for days, but that team struggled against Michigan. They won 30 games, but they didn't have great, great cohesion and chemistry when they're on the court. They just had a lot of talent. And Izzo to this day still thinks that particular group could have won a title. I do not. At some point they were going to get beat because they didn't have what, say, the Cassius Winston team in 2019 had, which was just this cohesion it was all because the ball was in Winston's hands, but guys who really understood their roles and really played to their peak level, and guys who fit different positions at the college game, and Tillman coming into his own. That team just didn't have it. And some of the stuff was Jaren Jackson hadn't developed yet into what he would, you know, become in the pros and all that. But those two teams, this one and that one, I think in terms of the teams I've covered, I look at and go, those are the teams he didn't get the most out of, and he could have.
Yeah, I've heard the Jeremy Fierce thing, and I know things change and he would have developed, but I reject it as an excuse. And I even Izzo kind of, in a way, uses an excuse. If you take out the Stony Brook and OU games, which I'm sorry, they should win 100 times out of 100. If you take out those two games, which were Jeremy Fierce's last games, they were already 5-5. I mean, all the problems with the roster and the construction of the team were present when he was playing. So I don't even know that he's been that big of a loss in terms of, I mean, I'd rather have him. I think he's going to be a real good player. I just think the flaws would have been there anyway. I don't think he's really mitigating much there. It's just frustrating. I stand by Izzo on the Booker stuff. I think you and I were maybe the only two holdouts of note. And I beat you. Even you after the Ohio State game, like, oh, he should have been out there. I'm still defending Izzo on that because the kid is so raw. He's come a long way. I agree with everything you said about his development next year. I think he's going to take a big leap. I want to talk a little bit about Hogard, though, because we're running long. I don't want to keep you too crazy long. But you and I were the last holdouts on Booker, I would argue. We may be the last holdouts on Hogard. I don't know where you stand on this. The ceiling is high with that guy. We've seen that. We talked about sliding doors with that Kansas State game. Michigan State's 1 point better if there's one fewer bank shots in that game against Kansas State. If any one of those million things go differently, how is this guy's legacy different? Had he gone to a Final Four last year? He went for 25-6 in that Kansas State game. He was really one of the more majestic performances in that situation. It's like the guy was 1 point away from having been the best player during that tournament run for a Final Four run. And then it's like it almost doesn't even matter. Whatever happens this year is gravy. This was the year to, you know, sort of finally get things going for him. Where are you at? You and I are the last two holdouts here. It's not been what we wanted this year from him individually. He's in a bad stretch again now. Are you getting off the Hogard train? Like, where are you at with him?
Yeah, I like talking with the guy. I think he's figured some things out. He understands when things don't go wrong, why they didn't go wrong, or why they went wrong. There are elements of him that have matured greatly. There are parts of him, though. You know, we talk about guys who aren't pros who are really good college players, and that's Hogard. So, I mean, he'll be a European pro. I'm talking like an NBA pro. And the challenge he has is once he figures the game out and the game works for him, he figures out how to get downhill. And it's one of the things I've always thought was slow starts. Sometimes he's still trying to figure out the opponent and how this game is going to work. And it takes him a minute. And sometimes in the past, you know, he's always get frustrated and take him out. And I think he was just still figuring out. Once he figures it out and he gets it to work to his favor, he can be a guy who takes over a game. He can be a dominant point guard. He can be a great player. And we've seen that in the Kansas State game is the best example of it. The first time I ever saw it was, I think, the Big Ten tournament game against Purdue his sophomore year, where he was just getting downhill and causing all sorts of problems. And so that is a real gift and a real talent. He is, because of him, one of the reasons they have the ability to make a run. He is fearless, and he believes in defensively, can hold up against just about anybody, and he's got size, and he's not scared of any moment and or any matchup. He is also not good enough to just take over at will because he wants to or because the team needs it. We saw that at Minnesota. He doesn't have the complete game to do it. Teams can take away some of the ability to get downhill. When he gets there, he doesn't have above the rim finishing, and so he misses layups when he's challenged. So he has limitations, but if the matchup is right and he figures it out, he can be a splendid college basketball player. And that's one of the reasons they're dangerous, because in a one-game scenario, in any matchup, we saw it in the second half against Arizona. Like, that Arizona doesn't want to see A.J. Hogard again. They don't want to see, we see moments where it's like, oh, whoa. And at the college level, he can take over, but he can't do it just because he wants to. And that's always going to be his weakness.
Yeah, and it's interesting what's going on with him, because it seems more like a case of the yips than anything else. He's never, even at his best in his entire career, had a five-game stretch where he was hot from three. It's just not his game. He is a drive-to-the-basket guy, but a hell of a finisher. But he hasn't been lately. It's like missed layups, missed little bunnies and stuff. I don't get the sense that it's a guy checked out or doesn't care. It just seems like a little bit of, I don't know if it's too much stress on himself. Denzel Valentine talked about that in the Middle Tennessee State game. He knew his run was coming to an end. He had no margin for error. I don't know what it is. It doesn't seem, whatever issues people may have had with him before, and I've always defended him, it's not the same kind of problem. He's getting to the rim. He's trying hard. He's just missing. Do you think he's feeling it like a little bit just pressure-wise? You're around this team, constantly. What's your read on him mentally from, afar but close enough?
Right. It's hard to know because, Hogard is a guy whose mindset, it doesn't seem to be carrying a heavy burden, when he walks around, put it that way. But I don't know that he's not. I do know that I thought when early in the year, and this changed, but early in the year, I thought part of Hogard's problem was Jeremy Fears being on the roster. And you had this guy that Izzo clearly liked a lot, liked his leadership, liked everything he was going to become. And he was not handling the idea of this guy right on his heels all that well. He needed to be a guy who can, I'm the guy, and this is my team, and I'm going to figure this out. And by late in December, and granted, it wasn't against the best competition, but we saw it against Baylor, certainly. I think Hogard was, okay, this is my team. I am going to be the guy. This is going to be 25 minutes for me. It's going to be 15 minutes for Fears. That's what it is. I'm good. You saw both those guys raise their games. I thought Fears, I'm really curious what Fears would have been. I do think it's I think there are bigger reasons and the season has gone how it has. But with Hogard, I thought he figured that out. And now I think in some ways he would have been better off with that guy on his heels, because I think it kept him sharp. He knew he had to play to a certain, the Minnesota game when it was time to take over, there's no real other option. And you saw the frustration with Izzo at the end of that game where he didn't mention Hogard in the press conference, but basically talked about him exclusively in the press conference, and just how at this point he was that frustrated. And then you see the next game, Hogard's really good against Illinois. And he has that moment where it's more symbolic than anything, but he pushes Izzo away and it's sort of, everything's good again. The problem is everything is good for one night and then it's not for the next. And what made, in a 7-game series, Michigan State would be toast. What makes them scary is they're not the favorite. They're not, if you were a one seed with A.J. Hogard, you're going, are you going to get 4 games in a row where, to get to that final four? But if you need one game and they're an 8 seed and you're the 1 seed facing him, you don't love it, because you just don't know that you're not going to get a day where he's really fantastic and some other things are clicking. And I do think whoever Michigan State plays in the second round, if they get to the second round, be it a 1 or a 2 seed, whatever it might be, that they will be in that game. I wouldn't pick them to win it, but I think they'll be in the game 3 to 5 points down, deep into the second half, and people be wondering if they can do it because they just got enough ability to play up.
Yeah, we've seen him on the biggest stage do it. I think the Kansas State game was universally considered the best game in the tournament. I know one of the writers at CBS said it was the best tournament game in like 2 or 3 years. And you know, in that moment where it's guys trading punches left and right, it was such a well-played, exciting game. Nobody was better on the Michigan State side than A.J. Hogarth. So it's not a guy where, oh, you can't trust him in a big spot because he's incapable of doing it. And that's maybe adding to the frustration. But he's a guy I'm going to go down with the ship with him. Like, until his career is over, I'm always going to believe he can go into that, you know, bag and get that done. And again, his legacy is completely different. And it's only not different because of, honestly, some bad breaks in that Kansas State game, nothing that he did. And also, I would argue, Izzo not getting a center. And it's like, how differently do we view him had he been the best player during a tournament run to the Final Four? That's not his fault that they didn't happen. Doesn't absolve him completely. But I want to talk briefly on Malik Hall. Carson Cooper said on my show, they, in a team meeting, Izzo, you know, gathered up some stats and just, you know, was talking about his field goal percentage the last couple of months, his 3-point percentage. He said, I've never seen anything like this in my entire tenure as a coach, assistant, or head. And it's a long career that you're talking about. This is an unprecedented run. I couldn't find anybody like this where he hasn't had a bad game, at least in terms of from the field, since 2 months ago, actually to the day, January 7th, when he had the famous donut against Northwestern. He's on a 2-month run where every night it's like 6 of 8 from the field, 7 of 11. You know, his worst night, I think, was 4 of 9. Never seen anything like this. You pull up Cassius, you pull up Kalen, Draymond, Denzel Valentine, pull up their last 2 months. They all had 5, 6, 7 games where they were cold from the field. His volume's a little lower. It's not that low. He's been the leading scorer in this run. What do you make of him? Are you surprised by the level he's elevated to at the stretch run here?
No, I'm a little surprised that it, I don't want to say surprised it didn't happen sooner, because he had injuries. Like, I thought last year, I wrote a column after they lost him at Illinois and just how integral he was to everything they did. And you know, I think with him and Hauser on the floor, it was always going to be a little tough for him to have this sort of role. And he's always been somebody who deferred probably too much at times. But I was a little, like, early in the year, even this year, when he would have good games, it didn't always translate to team success. And team success didn't always translate to him playing all that well. And that's what's changed too quite a bit. Like, if you look at the Baylor game, Malik Hall did not have a great game. The team was tremendous. You look at the Nebraska game on the road, he was outstanding. The rest of the team was not. And so for a long time, how much he correlated with team success was hard to read. And that's really changed. And, you know, he is somebody, I think, who is, he understands time is short. We've seen that with seniors before, not for this prolonged period. We saw it with Travis Trice. We've seen it with others who stepped up late in their careers. But I'm happy for him, because I always thought he was a kind of a jack of all trades, master of none. Like, I remember going back to his freshman year, one game he'd hit 3 threes. The next game he'd, you know, drive by somebody and dunk over them. Then he'd spin baseline and do something. Then he'd have a fadeaway jump. But he never did anything twice. And, you know, so you thought, well, he's got to come up with a go-to move. And then he sort of got that baseline fadeaway jumper for a little bit, but it wasn't enough to be like this deadly shot that just made him a star. And I think he's a guy who's finally maximized who he can be. And that's really, like, there are games where he hasn't played. Like, I don't think he was great in the Iowa game. There are games that I think he'll look back on, the Minnesota game. He was pretty despondent, the free throws he missed and how he played late in that game. He cares a ton. But I think ultimately, as long as they make the tournament, he's a guy who's going to be able to leave without regrets, because I do think he found it finally, and he's played to whatever, you know, his top level is, and that's really all you can ask.
Yeah, I mean, the Iowa game, what was he? It was like 16, 10, and 5. I mean, it's a pretty good bad game, Graham.
I might be thinking of the Ohio State game. There was one game in there where I'm and he might have had good numbers that game, where I just watching him play and watching the whole team body language lay, I thought they needed somebody to sort of carry the day with a little more aggression than, and he, you know, he wasn't the only one, but none of them were there for it. And so there have been moments, but yeah, the overall 2 months, I mean, it's Malik Hall could be the starting power forward and the number 3 player on a national championship team. And it's not, they don't have those pieces probably to do that, but that's not on him. I mean, he's been tremendous. And what I've always liked about Malik, I've used this analogy before, but if you have, you know, if you've got a house that has like a uncle's house that has the Thanksgiving dinner with all the parents and you're at the kids table and nobody ever gets to move up because everybody just gets older together. And one spot opens up because somebody dies or gets divorced or whatever happens. And one of the kids gets to go, Malik Hall goes to the adult table. Like, he has been the adult in the room for several years. And, you know, that I've appreciated. I've had good conversations with him. I think he's, you know, there are certain guys that when you get to know them, you root for them to have good lives in basketball. But some guys you look at and go, this guy's got to make it in hoops because he's got nothing else. And then other guys you go, well, you know, if basketball doesn't work out, it'll be fine. He's going to have a really good life. And Malik Hall is one of those people that, you know, he can have a pro career somewhere for quite a while if he wants, but he's also going to have a really good life doing whatever he wants to do.
I agree. Malik Hall could be a senator. I mean, he could kind of be whatever he wants. Smart guy, really well-spoken, kind, and a big fan of his just as a guy and a long fan of his game. Graham, last thing, you had maybe the best sports writer in the country on your show today, Brendan Quinn. I say that even though he's rejected many invitations. You're a guy familiar with this. I wore you down finally. Maybe I can finally crack him at some point. His point with Izzo I thought was interesting, and we'll finish here. You asked him about the portal stuff, and you know, you were, you know, I think, similarly confused as I am by some of it, and you're curious where he's going to go. He made the point of the century, I would argue, saying, you know, it's interesting. Tom Izzo was on the forefront of how to use video in scouting and how to use biometrics and analysis. He was on the cutting edge of that stuff. He's listing all these examples where, you know, pace of play and fast break and how to run out, like get running out. He's setting all these examples of Tom Izzo being at the forefront and ahead of the curve. And he seemed perplexed that Tom Izzo not only is not ahead of the curve, but so far behind it on the portal. It's the complete opposite. And he didn't really have any explanation for it. It was just an observation. He didn't really have an answer for you. And it's not his fault. I can't figure it out either. Finish here. Does that tell you anything about, you know, are we nearing the end with him, where his entire career he's been two steps ahead of everybody else in so many ways, and now he's, at least in one key metric, so many steps behind? Does that tell you anything about him big picture, or does he pivot and make the revival that he needs to here at the end?
The difference between those two things, between talking like being at the forefront of video and certain, you know, areas of scouting and the portal for him, I believe, is that he believes overall that the way the portal is used and is working is hurting kids and hurting the game. Now, whether it's hurting the game is one question. I think overall it's definitely hurt kids. It's hurt high school recruiting. I don't think there's any doubt that more kids have been left out to dry with it than not, but he's got to get over that. Like, so I think the problem is he sees one thing is like bad for the game, but it doesn't mean it's bad for his program. And he's got to not correlate those two things. And so I think that's where it's different with the scouting and the film and all that stuff. There was no downside. One thing I think he thinks is a problem in the big picture for kids now and 10 and 20 years down the road, and that's fine. And whether you don't want to be the leader in that stuff is fine. You don't have to have 7 new players every year. The teams with 7 new players aren't doing well. But there are a lot of teams with 2 or 3 new players that are doing well. And I think that's what he needs to look at. And it's a year-to-year thing. I mean, what do you need this year? And what do you need, you know, what does next year's roster need? You do have to weigh development and guys transferring. If you have a really promising freshman that you're not sure about their development, but you're worried they're going to leave, yeah, you got to be careful of that. There are a lot of things to weigh. But there are also certain years where you're trying to win a title and other years where you're trying to build toward a title. This was supposed to be a year. You got 4 23-year-olds in the starting lineup. Well, I guess Soko probably shouldn't have been there. So it should have been 3 23-year-olds in the starting lineup and another guy who's a junior. You know, that's a year to go chase it. And I would argue when you have a guy like Booker, maybe final year in college, a year to go chase it. And in a day and age, frankly, where, you know, guys are going to, could leave or transfer every time, there's probably more of those years. I do think guys are going to stay in college longer because of NIL, and there's, you know, not worth the financial risk to jump in the draft early or anything. So you might be able to hang on to rosters longer, but this was a year to do it. And I think next year is where the holes will be, will probably be pretty clear. You're going to have to make a calculus on guys like Cooper and Booker and Kohler and all that, but there's no doubt you can't 100% trust that they're going to take that jump. And I think Cooper would be, one of the things I like about Carson Cooper is he is a very self-aware young guy, really is. I mean, he knows what he can and can't do, and he knows where he's got to get better. And I think he will get there. And it's not a bad thing if you bring somebody in and Carson Cooper beats them out. So be it. That's fine. That's great if somebody develops. That's competition. That's just the way of the world at this level. And I think, that's something that he's got to be willing to do if he wants to get the program to the place it was 4 years ago. And, this doesn't have to be the way it ends for him, just sort of, getting into tournaments and maybe having one more or, a couple more runs that are unexpected or, because of you're playing single game situations and you've got some talent. Izzo, I still think he has the energy to do it. I still think he has the drive to do it. I still think he wants a second title. He's got all the pieces in place to create a program that, and more than almost anybody else in the country, to create a program that's competing for titles. But it's going to have to some degree, include the portal year to year. And I think I do think moving forward, he'll be willing to do it.
Yeah, he's one phone call away to Ishbia from getting whatever he wants. I mean, Ishbia does not say no to Tom Izzo. I was told Tom Izzo calls him. The money will be there if they need it. And, that's the bottom line. It's available to him. And, as far as Carson Cooper goes, people that hate that guy are crazy in the Michigan State fan base. He's a dream backup center. Maybe he could become more. But even right now, all the analytics have him as one of the 10 to 15 best defensive players in the entire country. Smaller sample size, but with what you're working with, phenomenal defensive player, underrated in my opinion. So I would defend him on that. The magic number is not seven. Like you said, I don't want seven transfer players either. You looked at those four Final Four teams last year with the breakdown, it was 13 total. Miami had three, UConn had three, FAU had three, San Diego State had four. So seems like three or four is about right. I think last year was a very similar picture the year before in the Final Four. Michigan State's magic number was one the last 2 years. They just needed one, and they went 0-0. So I'm with you. I think Izzo needs to pivot just a little bit. They lost the opportunity to, I think, have two much better seasons. We'll see to what extent they redeem that. But, Graham, I appreciate you. I know you're busy. We ran longer than I said. I hope this does not preclude you from coming again at some point. You do a great job on the show. And really, I got to go watch, actually, the last 15 minutes of you on your show. I watched most of it today. I'm going to go finish that right now, but you do a great job. Your show and the Sleepers guys, I don't know if you're friends with Waddell and Carter Elliott. Those are the two best shows in the space for my money. It's not even close. So great job by you as always.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for the kind words, and I'm happy to come on anytime.
You bet. Graham Couch, Lansing State Journal. We'll catch you guys next time. A lot of stuff coming up that's fun, exciting. I'm talking to a little man named Steven Izzo, you might have heard of. He might be joining us again soon. He's pretty hot in the news right now, so we're working on that. We'll keep you guys posted on that. Go Green. See you guys next time.